Good evening, it's Rabbi Mayevsky. I entitle tonight's share on Parshas Vayetzeh, The Legacy of Lavan. And what I mean by that is very simply, or not simply at all. When we bring Bikurim all the way in Parshas Kisavo, we say Arami Oved Avi. And it's a very interesting thing that we say it at that point in time. And of course, much is written about that, why at that point in time we come to that statement when we're bringing Bikurim, we're thanking God for getting us to Eretz Yisrael at this time. We have to turn the clock back to this parasha and even before that. And it becomes very clear. We have to put a lot of things in the lap of Lavan. So much of what happens this parasha and post this parasha next week, the week after, is all a result. The rest of Parshas Bereishis really has a total bearing on Lavan himself, exactly what he brought forth because of what he did. And this is how it all begins. We noticed at the end of last week's parsha, it was very not strange, but the statement is when after Yaakov steals the bracha, or the bracha that he was deserving of, after all, we know that v'yivez esav es habechora, and even Lavan, it comes to mind when he says, v'yakveni zeh pamoyim, he has fooled me twice. Very interestingly enough, Yitzhak, at that point, he says, Gam baruch yeyeh, because then he realizes himself at that point in time that Yaakov has not necessarily done the right thing, but at least he had a leg to stand on and he understood better, because that is the point where Yitzhak can obviously say, what do you mean two times? What happened previously? Of course, we would like to think that Yaakov probably could have spoken to his father beforehand and maybe explained to him where years ago that this happened. And if Yitzhak had complained that this was something that happened to his children and it didn't really mean anything, but he could have explained him the circumstances, as I mentioned last week, why Vayokum Vayelach, instead of going in to pay his respects to his father after Avram died, it says Vayokum Vayelach. The Torah is very specific about the language. He would have understood and realized that the ship for Esav had sailed in terms of Yiddishkeit, in terms of being a Torah Jew. And so it comes to this parasha, and we see at the end of Toldos, Rivka tells him, Barach Lecha El Lavon Achicha Rono, and Yitzhak, on the other hand, says, Kum Lech Padena Aram. That's where we finished off. And it's very interesting the fact that it mentions two different places, whether they're one in the same place. That's open to discussion, but I don't see anybody commenting on that at all. But the fact remains, Vayetze Yaakov Mibershova Vayelech Harona. Yitzchak noticed that he says, just, you can go whenever you're ready. And Rivka says, Barach Lecha, run away. Yitzchak has a different level of confidence and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that nothing untoward would happen to Yaakov, because God has made him a promise and he's fully confident in what God has told him. Yaakov, on the other hand, is a little more leery of what's going on. He's now running away from Esau and on his way to Lavan. He's going from the frying pan into the fire, as the expression would be. And naturally, he has a dream, and in the dream, he sees the angels going up and down. Of course, psychologically, if one is, you would ask a psychologist, why would somebody would have a dream about going up? Because when you squeeze from both sides, there's only one avenue of escape, and that is going up. So that's a purely psychological effect. But the fact remains, he has this dream, and in the dream, God says, "Vashivo sicho elu adam azos ki lo esav ka." Don't worry, that I will be with you. And he's on some level, I wouldn't say depressed necessarily, but could be that he was on some level somewhat depressed, not knowing what the future held for him. And God comes to reassure him. And after the dream of the ladder, God reassures him. And he says, V'shapti v'shalom v'beis avi. And that's it. And Yaakov makes a promise, V'chol asher titen li, I accept your hug. And I really feel good about it. And that's why the next pasuk begins, Vayisa Yaakov Raglov. The burden has now lifted. He was able to, so to speak, have a little more jaunt in his step, a little more joy in the way he was traveling. It's a wonderful thing. He feels confident. And we're told on the way that Eliphaz, we have this, the Medrash that says Eliphaz accosted him on the way and took everything that he had, which will come into play shortly enough. But Yaakov goes on his way, and he comes to Haran. It says he comes to Haran, and he comes to a well. Always very important point, because obviously Rivka was met at the well, and he's well aware that this is a meeting place and where people gather. So it's a good place to meet the local people and find out what, you know, he doesn't know exactly, doesn't have his GPS on where Lavan lives, certainly. Maybe he's not sure if it's Aram or Haran, because they have different places where they told him to go. But nevertheless, what is surprising is that Yitzhak says to go to the house of Besuel, and Rivka says to go to Lavan. Of course, the difference there is a very important one, because if Yaakov is running away from Esau, he's looking for someone to protect him. Besuel is certainly, if he's still alive, we don't know, he wouldn't be able to protect Yaakov in the same way that Lavan, being young and a family, would be able to. But at this point in time, he comes to the well, and they're surrounded. He sees over there are many shepherds standing by, and they're not doing anything. And he says to them, you know, it's not the time. I mean, how come? Imagine he's a stranger in town, so to speak, and now he is looking for directions. And before he introduces himself and says what he's here for, he tells these people that, you know, they should get back to work. There's still sunlight out, and you should go back to work, giving them tochacha. But at this point in time, when he tells them, they said, it's impossible for us to go back to work at this point. We understand, but everybody has to gather. All the shepherds have to gather around so that we could take this huge boulder off the well and go back and get to work so we could water the animals. And Yaakov asked them, you know, Hayyadatem es Lavan ben Nachar. Well, while we're talking, do you happen to know Lavan ben Nachar? And he doesn't even mention Besuel, but he says Lavan ben Nachar, very good. Nachar, I guess, was the more famous person. But the interesting thing here is the choice of words again. He doesn't say, oh, Lavan, we know him. The Torah is very succinct in the language, but it's more than that. It's trying to express what they actually said. And what they answered him is very interesting by itself when it says, Vayomru Yodanu. It's not just that we know him. It's, yeah, we know Lavan. We know what type of person he is, sort of the implication. Imagine if I would ask you, do you know this person? And they would ask you, yeah, we know him. Vayomru Yodanu. And that's all they say. They have nothing more to say, nothing to add. Oh, he lives here or he lives there, nice family. Nothing like that. And Yaakov goes on and says that he's trying to elicit some more conversation. And he says, Vayomer lahem ha-shalom lo. Is everything all right? Vayomer lahem. And they just said, Vayomru shalom. Now, that's a very interesting way of expressing themselves once again. When he says, Vayomru shalom, are they talking about Lavan, that things are at peace with him? Or are they just ignoring Yaakov in terms of the question about Lavan, or are they just saying, shalom, peace be with you, my friend. You know, we have nothing more to add about Lavan. And then suddenly it says, Vine Rachel bito ba'a imatzon. And Rachel suddenly appears with the bat Lavana, Yachi Imo, and Rachel suddenly appears with the sheep from her father. And the other shepherds are standing around, and Rachel wants to water the sheep. And Yaakov calmly picks up this huge boulder, being a very strong specimen. We always have to imagine that we take it as Yaakov being this, not necessarily a shrinking violet, obviously, but we think of Esau as this big, burly person, and Yaakov being certainly of a homebody, Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Oalim. But let's always remember that Yaakov and Esau were twins, and they probably looked somewhat alike other than hair color, but they certainly would have the same build as you see with most twins. You don't see one that's a giant and one that's very short or not muscular. And if Yaakov was able to pick up this big boulder and move it aside all by himself, when it would take the strength of all the other shepherds to go down and budge or move this stone from on top of the well, and that would take a great degree of strength. And that is there to tell you of Yaakov's great prowess. And more than that now, when Rachel sees this and it says, Vayishak Yaakov leRachel, Vayomer ki achi ovi ohu, he starts to tell her that we're cousins, and, you know, he gives her Vayisaper, he tells her everything that transpired. That in itself is a very important fact, because what happens is, when she runs home to her father, she tells him all the things that transpired. And what are we interested in this point in time? And it says that Yaakov tells Lavan again what happened after Rachel tells everything that happened. And he grabs him, Vayichabek lo, Vayanashek lo, and he says all these things to him, and he grabs him and he hugs him. What is the point, really, of hugging him and kissing him? Does he love him, this type of person, to be that kind of a hugging him, feeling person of that nature? The reality is, of course, as we know, he's thinking about when Eliezer came to procure Rivka for Yitzchak, he brought all these gifts, and now he comes, he's empty-handed. But of course, Rachel told him the whole story, that, you know, she gave him all the background about what happened with Esau and what happened with Eliphaz, and she's telling him all these things. And Lavan is very suspicious of the whole story. He doesn't necessarily believe that Yaakov could be accosted and mugged, so to speak, by Eliphaz. Because if what I heard from you, you told me, Rachel, that the shepherds together had to wait till they all gathered. You know that. You know that boulder. You've been there, I'm sure. And you know that it takes a lot of people to lift that stone. And now Yaakov came along and moved that boulder by himself. You expect me to believe that somebody came along and accosted Yaakov and he wasn't able to stand up for himself and do anything about it? That he would say, who do you think you're starting up with? Look at me. I can take you, or whatever it is, or certainly not stand by and let him take all the gifts that he thought he might be bringing to Rachel at this point in time. Wouldn't that be more logical? And that's what Lavan is thinking now. And he, Vayichabek lo, Vayanashek lo, he kisses him, but he's checking him out because he's thinking that, more than likely, he's thinking that he must have some hidden jewels, some hidden gems in his pocket that he's not saying anything about. And it's very interesting to think about that in terms of what Lavan is saying. And we're getting a feeling of what type of person, not that we didn't know till now, but we're fleshing out the character much more than that. And where I'm going with this all at the end is that after all of these events transpire, and Lavan fools Yaakov after Kimalu Yomai, he says, of course, the Malbim makes a very interesting question. Why would Yaakov imagine he wants to marry Rachel, and he blurts out, you know, I want to marry Rachel. I'll work for you for 7 years. How about waiting and asking Lavan first to say, well, I want to marry your daughter Rachel. What do you expect me? In other words, what do I need to do for you to give your daughter's hand in marriage to me? And let Lavan make the first offer. Let him throw out the first salvo. That's what you were taught to do in business. But Yaakov is not necessarily thinking like that, because the Torah tells us that's why every pasuk is very important. It says, to him, it seemed like a very short period of time. And even though he was 77, and now he's, by the time the 7 years will be up, he'll be 84. And now, Lavan fools him, Vayasov Lavanas kol anshei mishteh, anshei hamakom vayas mishteh, and he wants all these witnesses to witness all these things. And suddenly the next day he finds out, obviously, we know what happens, and that it's Leah. Unbelievable. And he's totally mortified, mystified, and when he confronts Lavan, Lavan says, Lo yeyoseh kein bimkomenu, lo seis hatzirah, lefnei habetzirah. You know, he's hiding behind the asherah. He quotes all these things. These are the rules of the land. And what's more, listen, from what I heard, you're a wise guy yourself. You surreptitiously took, you know, Bimirma, and you went ahead stealthily and you stole the bracha from your brother. You're one of the guys and you know exactly how things work. And therefore, you know how business is transacted. You have to be careful, and you weren't, you know, Today we would say you have to do your due diligence, and you lack to do it. And you thought you were smart, but, you know, listen, these are the way things happen. And these things rub off. It's very important to know that Yaakov is getting a lesson here, because while that wasn't his idea, stealing the bracha, that was his mother's idea, and he did exactly what his mother told him. And this wasn't what he was thinking. He's a man of Titein Emes LeYaakov. But the point is over here is that Laban fools him, and now he's forced to, after he marries Leah, he waits another week, Sheva Brachas are over, and he gets married to Rachel. No party the second time, because Laban doesn't need witnesses now, because everything that he planned to do worked out perfectly for him, and he gets rid of both daughters. But what I wanted to focus on, the legacy of Laban, what he causes down the line in the future. We see, Vayara Hashem Kisnua Leah, God sees that Leah is the less than loved one. She's the hated one. Imagine that. And it says, Ayiftach es Rachma. We shouldn't think that because Leah had so many children, in the end she had 7 children, that she was very fertile, because the Pasuk says, Vayara Hashem Kisnua Leah, Vayiftach es Rachma. That not only were Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Akaros, but Leah was also an Akara, Vayiftach es Rachma. God felt sorry for her, he had mercy for her, Kisnua, and he said, Vayiten li zeh, God opened up a womb and gave her Reuven. And what does she say? Ki ra'ah Hashem b'yonyi, ki ato yehvani yishi, and she gets Reuven. But when we have a bris and we name one of our children, we wonder what will the end result of that name be for the child. Will it have an effect? Does it have to rub off? And of course, you know, at every bris we make speeches and we say where the child's name came from. We hope that it was named after a big tzaddik, and maybe he'll have the same midos as this person. He'll rise to be a great, great person as the person we named him after. And lo and behold, what does the father has seemingly no input in the name? Maybe because Yaakov was not totally concerned over here, because he really wanted a child from Rachel. And a few years are going by, and well, who's born? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And until after Yehuda, it says, Vatamod miledes. And Rachel is getting increasingly bitter. But what we see here is how bitter Leah is. And don't think for 1 minute that it doesn't rub off on the children. Well, we wonder later on why Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and even Yehuda. We should remember that in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef is sold down to slavery and the other brothers want to kill him, while Yehuda saves him from murder, but he's the one who says, Ma betza ki narog esochinu, v'chisinu esamo, l'chu v'nim karenu le'yishmeel, and let's sell him down the river, we'll get rid of him. Is that such a wonderful thing? The difference with Yehuda was, though, that Yehuda owned up to his mistake. He understood it first. But Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi certainly were very bitter people. Now, whose fault was the cause of their attitude growing up? And we have to put that at the hands right now, at the first salvo, is that it would be Leah's fault. Because what happens? She names him instead of Yaakov giving any input. Leah gives him the name. And what does she say? God saw my discomfort, my pain, and Reuven. Children grow up and they start to see the difference between the interaction between the mother and the father. And Leah is always this bitter person, because even after she has Reuven, does it placate her? Does it make her feel better? Maybe for the moment. But even after she has the next child and she has Shimon, she doesn't sound any better. And what happens? So when Reuven is born, she says, Ki amra, ki ra, Hashem b'yonyi, saw my pain, ki ato yevani yishi. And then she has another son, and she says it again, Ki snua anochi vayiten li gam eseh, and he gave me this son because he sees I'm hated. She realizes that even after the first son, she would think that Yaakov became closer to her. and she still feels this anguish, this pain, and she gives Shimon the name. Kids are growing up, and child always likes to know, who was I named after, and why was I given that name? And what is she saying to them? Well, I named you because Daddy hates me, and so I gave you the name Reuven. I gave you the name Shimon also was another way of expressing my hatred that your father had, the hatred that your father has for me. He really wanted Reuven, and we did all these other things that happened. And Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Levi is Atoi Lavei Shie like, you're allowed to close up on him, because if I'm taking my kids out, I didn't exactly have a big carriage for twins in those days, and I'm carrying two. It's the symbolism there is, he'll have to carry the third, so that'll make him closer to me. If we're going someplace with all three children, he'll have to be with me. Very nice. But imagine being saddled with that, and the children are growing up with that pain. They see their mother. And there we get to the fact when it says later on, Vayilechu Reuven b'mei Kitzir Chitim, Vayim Tzadu Doim b'Sodeh. And what happened? Imagine Reuven always trying to stick up for his mother. We see that again later on. Reuven is the Bechor, and we see later on when it says, Vayishkavetz Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv, in the next parasha, when it says what Reuven does, he never got over the fact that his father was very unhappy with Leah. And that rubs off on the child. The way that Reuven, Shimon, and Levi deal with Yosef at the end, the favorite son of Yaakov, when Yosef is finally born, he finally got what he wanted. And even Rachel is bitter, and she complains to Yaakov. You know, Hasachas Elokim Anochi, Yaakov has to answer, Hashem Monami Neh, who do you think I am, God? I pray, did you pray? We wonder sometimes, people want to make somebody to make a mishaber for them when they're not well, or they want something, they ask. Well, a lot of times there are rebbeim who will say, why are you asking me? What are you doing for yourself? Did you daven for it? Did you personally ask for it? What have you done? It's not just going to ask somebody else for a bracha. I want to know what you're willing to do for it. Are you doing perhaps some kind of tshuva, change in attitude? And Rachel and Leah are growing up these bitter people. But we have to get down to the facts. Who is the cause of all of this? The architect of all this discomfort and all of this pleasure and all of these further future actions of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, who are the architects of all of these things that caused the gullus in Mitzrayim, are as a cause of Lavan starting up with Rachel and Leah. All this has come down to that. That is Lavan's legacy. So who is Lavan? He is the Ramai. He is the one out for only one person. And even towards the end, when after 20 years, when Yaakov finally wants to move, and he thinks perhaps that Rachel and Leah have some sort of affinity or respect for their father, and he doesn't want them to leave, and maybe they won't want to leave him there in his old age. We don't know how old he is, but certainly he's older than Yaakov. And a Yaakov is no youngster at this point in time. And they say, Halo nachrios, nechashav nulo ki macharonu vayochal ochol es katspena. We don't even think that we will inherit anything from our father when he goes. We have no reason to hang around. There's nothing left for us here. Let's certainly go back. But all of the die has been cast now for the next generation of the rearing of Yaakov's children, even when he comes around and focuses on them when they finally leave. But the formation of their character and their traits, not just because they live in proximity to Lavan, but Lavan manufactured their hatred in Leah, the unfortunate circumstances for Rachel, who was a bitter person as well, it never could have, and of course she died very young. Chazal tell us, I don't know if it's Chazal, but there are Svarim that say that Rachel was 46 when she died, and that Leah was only 51, and possibly they were twins, we don't know, but necessarily she didn't live much longer. But the fact remains, the legacy of Lavan is the sale of Yosef and the Golos Mitzrayim. And the only thing that could assuage that, ease the pain of that scenario, is going and eventually arriving in the land. That will ease the pain and giving everybody an equal share in the land. And when we bring the Bikurim, let's all remember the fault was not necessarily the reason for all of the 40 years in the Midbar, the discord between the Shvatim and the fights in the Midbar even, all the scenario that brought them down, the Shevet Reuven causing the Maisa Korach and various other things, were all down to love on. And we say, Arami Oved Avi, let's not fight amongst each other. It was all down to Lavan's fault. Let us focus on the cause and effect. Who generated all this discord in Klal Yisrael? We are brothers. When we say Arami Oved Avi, we love each other as brothers. It was Lavan's fault. And that's what the Torah is trying to impart by saying we must utter those things, otherwise there'll never be Achdus in Klal Yisrael. May we all be zochah to see unity in Bnei Yisrael. Have a good evening. Thank you.